Terry was the charge. Hospital is the Shishima in the morning days. She had Yuthi, Mokti Vadam, Yuthi, Mokti, Go, Shamaha, Mokti, Yuthi, Skan, Tan, Vishar, Yuthi, Shri Prabhupada flooding the whole universe with ecstatic Krishna prema. Kori Vaishnava ki jai Nama Chanja Shila Haridas Thakur ki jai Paramsa kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopinath Shamakun Narakun Giri Govardhan ki jai Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Mayapur Dham ki jai, Navadvip Dham ki jai, Jagannath Puri Dham ki jai, Ganga Mayi ki jai, Jamuna Mayi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaura Premananda. All the beasts to the Asambhava Bhakti. All glories to the Asambhava Devotee, all glories to the Asambhava Devotee. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Ram Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Svayamitina, Namaste Sarasvati Vakramani Pracharini. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 14, text number 42.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yeah. Even a Kshatriya could not contact a woman of the Brahmana caste. The wife of a Brahman is considered one of the seven mothers, namely one's own mother, the wife of the spiritual master or teacher, the wife of a Brahman, the wife of a king, the cow, the nurse, and the earth. Such contact between man and woman was known as Uttama and Adhama. Contact with Brahman with a Kshatriya woman is Uttama. But the contact of the Kshatriya, the Brahman woman, the Dhamma, and therefore condemned. A woman approaching a man for contact should never be refused, but at the same time, the discretion as above mentioned may also be considered. Bhima was approached by his Indi from a community lower than the Shudras, and Yayati refused to marry the daughter of Shukracharya because of Shukracharya being a Brahmana. Vyasadeva, a Brahmana, was called to beget Pandu, a Dhritarashtra. Such a deity belonged to a family of fishermen, but Parashara, a great Brahmana, begot in her Vyasadeva. So, there are many examples of contacts with women, but in all cases the contacts were not abominable, nor were the results of such contacts bad. Contact between man and woman is natural, but that also must be carried out under regulated principles so that social consecration may not be disturbed or unwanted, worthless population be increased for the unrest of the world. It is abominable for a Kshatriya to be defeated by one who is inferior in strength or equal in strength. If one is defeated at all, he should be defeated by some superior power. Arjuna was defeated by Bhishma Dev, and Lord Krishna saved him from the danger. This was not an insult for Arjuna because Bhishma Dev is far superior to Arjuna in all ways, namely age, respect and strength. But Karna was equal to Arjuna, and therefore Arjuna was in crisis when fighting with Karna. He was felled by Arjuna, and therefore Karna was killed even by crooked means. Such are the engagements of Kshatriyas, and Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired from his brother whether anything undesirable happened on the way home from Dwarka.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yatavaratama Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sadrajatam Sadhanaragnatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Sapadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ladita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Devataya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Prasarine Nirvishesh
So we can see here that there were very strict codes regarding how one should deal with women. And if one did not properly follow these principles, then one would become in a very inauspicious position. So Yudhisthira is thinking, and Arjuna is so dejected, perhaps he didn't properly deal with a woman. So this is very poignant point that one has to have all respect for Vaishnavis,
One has to always deal in a very respectful way with all the devotees, men, women, and both. Of course, they are not actually men and women. That is a covering only. That is the external covering. But yet, because we have these external coverings, we are meant to act in accordance with certain etiquettes in regards to these external coverings. And these etiquettes are properly followed, then becomes very auspicious. The second point is the Kshatriya. He can be defeated by someone of superior strength. That is not an insult to his position. But to be defeated by someone who is equal or lower, that is a great shame for the Kshatriya. So we see the Vedic culture has certain principles, and by sticking to those principles, one remains dalit, one remains enlightened. But if one violates the principles, then one becomes dejected, one becomes morose, one becomes depressed. So the Vedic culture is actually not just some meaningless rules and regulations. The Vedic culture is a scientific process of how a living entity can become free from the influence of the modes of material nature. You may say, well, how you can possibly use these external designations, you know, more powerful, less powerful, male, female. I mean, isn't that within the modes of nature? But actually, that is a Vedic principle. As Prabhupada says, you can use the thorn to remove the thorn. So we act in terms of bodily distinctions in a way according to Vedic principles which releases us from bodily distinctions. It's a very good example. You're going on Govardhan Parikrama. And you get a thorn in your foot, and you left your tweezers back at the ashram. What to do? How to get the thorn out? Well, here's another thorn. You can take that thorn and pull out the thorn. So in this way, we act in terms of external distinctions according to Vedic principles to free ourselves from these external designations. So it's not wrong to make some distinction. Just like in the Vedic culture, Matravat Padadhareshu. Prabhupada always quoted that verse from Chanakya Pandit. How one should see every woman except for one's wife as mother. And Prabhupada actually personally instructed me. He told me to address every woman as mother. That was his personal instruction, the one letter he wrote me. So, of course, Prabhupada also said that all initiated devotees are Prabhu. So, and not that if someone is a Mataji, they're not a Prabhu. It's like my as growing up as a small boy, I had my mother, I had my father. They're both my Prabhus. I have to obey both of them. See, my mother is my Prabhu, and my father is my Prabhu. So sometimes it may be confusing. Well, Prabhupada said all initiated devotees should be called Prabhu, and then he also said that the women should be called Mother. They say, well, what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to call them Prabhu or Mataji? Actually, either one is correct. They're both correct. But to say that only Mataji is correct, that's not true. Or to say only Prabhu is correct, that's not true. They're both correct. Because Prabhupada said both things. So there are these etiquettes that are given by Srila Prabhupada actually liberate us from these distinctions. If we concoct our own system and not following Prabhupada's system, then we're just remaining in the clouds of mental speculation. And that will keep us in bodily consciousness. If we take the instructions that Prabhupada has given us, And we just carry them out. Prabhupada said this, okay, let's do it because Prabhupada said it. We may not understand all these principles. We may not understand all the rules and regulations of Bhakti Yoga. They may not all make sense to us. I know, for example, my Gosser Shalavati, who was the head pujari in Los Angeles, she was very highly respected. Even the sannyasi, Amrimund Sannyasi, said, he said, whatever Shalavati says regarding deity worship is law. That's how much she was respected in this country. You know, this. She was the, LA was the place where all the training was being given on how to worship deities. And she was the head of Vajari, so she was a big, big authority in this kind of music. But I remember she asked Prabhupada a question, because it mentions in that devotion not to wear blue in front of the deities. And so she said, why should a Prabhupada, we can't wear blue in front of the deities? Prabhupada said, because it's a rule. Prabhupada didn't give any other reason, just because it's a rule. And there are certain principles that Prabhupada has given us. We may not understand all of them, but of course we're not. Prabhupada also, it's interesting in connection with that instruction. The thing is, don't wear red or blue. But in the very first wedding of this kind, Mukunda and Janaki, Prabhupada said, buy her a red sari for the wedding. So you may say, well, it says no red or blue, then Prabhupada instructed to get a red sari. You know, how do you make sense of all this? So there are certain things that are very much emphasized and certain things that are not so much emphasized. This is the advantage of having Prabhupada on the planet. We would see what things he really wanted us to follow and what things were not as important. To have the pure devotee on the planet with us. You could see, you know, what is pure devotional service in action? Prabhupada told us in Mayapur, the very famous morning walk, they titled it on the cassette, The Proper Application of Rules and Regulations. Prabhupada told a story about his coming to New York City. He was staying with one couple before he got 26 Second Avenue. He stayed a few days with one couple. Now, they were vegetarians, but they had some meat in the refrigerator. And you don't... A brahmana would never put his bhoga that he's going to offer to Krishna in a refrigerator that has meat in it. I mean, that's completely taboo. Okay? You wouldn't put your bhoga in a place that had meat. I mean, that's not brahminical. So Prabhupada said, if I had cried for breaking my rules and regulations, in other words, how could I even come into your country if I hadn't had some flexibility? And he asked them, they said, well, that's for the cats. It's not for us, we're vegetarian. It's for the cats. So Prabhupada had a very transcendental vision of, you know, what are the proper application of rules and regulations. Prabhupada told us that we could not break the rules and regulations, but if there was some need, we should consult with the spiritual master. Sometimes the rules and regulations are violated. Sometimes they're not. Prabhupada gives the example of Lord Chaitanya's servant, Govinda. He was massaging, his service was massaging Lord Chaitanya. Wow, what a service. Massaging Lord Chaitanya, can you imagine? But anyway, he used to massage Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya fell asleep. So he was in, Lord Chaitanya fell asleep in the doorway, and Govinda is inside the room. So it's time for lunch. So How could you couldn't step over Lord Chaitanya? That's a violation of etiquette. So he missed his line. And so Lord Chaitanya woke up. He said, Govinda, why did you not take your lunch? He said, my dear Lord, I cannot step over you. He said, but you stepped over me to come into the room. He said, that was forgiving service. Forgiving service, I can break the rule of stepping over you, but not for my sense gratification. So it's interesting that Prabhupada described these things. The real point is devotional service. We have to always do what is conducive for serving Krishna, for pleasing Krishna. Yena tena prakarena mana Krishna in the Vaishaya Sarva Vidhi Nisheda Shor Etayor Eva Kim Kada. One should fix his mind on Krishna by any means. All the rules and regulations of the scriptures should be the servants of this principle. This is stated by Rupa Goswami. So the real point is to be Krishna conscious. That's the real point of our process of Krishna consciousness. What is the name of our society? The International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Is it the International Society for Rules and Regulations? No. So the rules and regulations are not ends in themselves, they are means for achieving the end of being Krishna conscious. In fact, if you're too much into rules and you're not up into Krishna consciousness, niyama agraha, it's the cause of falling down from Krishna consciousness, according to Rupa Goswami and the Upadeshamrita. So we have to understand, of course, I remember in the old days, it's not really fanatical. Devotees were really, really fanatical about rules and regulations, like, and I mean, they would invent rules out of the air, you know, like Prabhu, you can only have 7 shaktis for breakfast. The worst example was in Berkeley, they had a rule how long you could stay on the toilet for taking care of nature's call. There was some limit how many seconds you could spend on the toilet. Otherwise, you're gratifying your senses, Prabhu. So, you know, we really have to see what, you know, what's beneficial for Krishna consciousness. It's like I had one disciple, he was saying, well, you know, brahmacharis have to sleep on the floor, they can't have they have to just sleep on the floor as a brahmachari life, you know. But he was having health problems by sleeping on the floor, and he wasn't getting proper rest. But he's thinking, no, I'm a brahmachari, I have to sleep on the floor, because otherwise I'm not a brahmachari, not following the rules of brahmachari life. I have to sleep on the floor. But he was messing up his sadhana. He wasn't getting proper rest. I said, get a mattress. You know, the most important thing is you get a good rest and you're up every morning in time for Mangalarti. That's the most important. So he did this. He got a mattress. I hope he's sleeping well now. So the point is, we should do what is favorable for our Krishna consciousness. We abide by the rules. But we have to understand what is the purpose of it. The rules are to help us to be Krishna conscious. Not that just by following the rules you can go back to God. Not possible. Just by following rules you will attain the spiritual world. It's not a mechanical process. As Rupa Goswami points out, Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamati kriyatam yadi kato nalabhyate tatra lavayam api moyam ekalam janma koti sukritaya nalabhyate. Pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness cannot be achieved even by executing pious activities in hundreds and millions of lifetimes. It can be attained only by paying one price, the intense greed to attain it. If it is available somewhere, one must purchase it without delay. So that's how you actually get Krishna bhakti, is by greed. That's the real secret. You have to become greedy for bhakti. I had a dream the other night. I was talking with Indrajimna Swami, and we were in this dream going to analyze what is the meaning of greed. This laoyan is greed, because really, that's what it boils down to in Krishna consciousness. We have to become very, very greedy for Krishna. Just consider the greed of a lusty man for a woman, you see, to enjoy a woman, or the greed of a businessman for millions and billions of dollars, or the greed of a politician running for prime minister, you see, or for president. That intense desire, you see, that we have to have that for Krishna. We must intensely desire to have Krishna consciousness. The Mayavadis, they want to turn off all desire. I want to become desireless. But they desire desirelessness. That's contradictory. You see? They're not giving up desire, they're desiring desirelessness. So, to say, become free from desire, that is artificial position. The actual solution is, you have to desire Krishna. And then you become perfect. When you desire Krishna and only Krishna and nothing but Krishna, from now on for all of eternity, you become absolutely perfect. Krishna is the source of everything. He's present within every atom. There's nowhere where Krishna is not present. So when you connect with Krishna, you are connected with everything. You cannot be disconnected from anything. When we are connected with Krishna, we are connected with everything. So we are very fortunate. That His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, has so wonderfully revealed to us this process of how to become fully connected with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada has purely conveyed to us what is coming down to Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda Goswami. Atakshi Krishna Namadi Navadadrayam Indriyai Sevam Mukhe Vijivado Svayam Eva Spratyadaha. No one can understand or realize Krishna with his blunt, materially contaminated senses. Only when one is spiritualized or Krishnaized by engaging his senses in the service of Krishna, beginning with the tongue, jivabho, or the transcendental name, fame, forms, pastimes, entourage, paraphernalia, etc., of that amazing Krishna revealed to him. Krishna is actually truly amazing. He's absolutely remarkable. There is no person who can compete with Krishna. He's one without a second. His form is not subject to decay. He has no beginning. He is the beginning and the eternal Purusha, yet he is a person possessing the beauty of a blooming youth. It's like a blooming flower, there's a blooming youth. His whole body is blooming, and especially his eyes are blooming like lotus flowers. Just imagine somebody with blooming eyes like lotus flowers. Of course, Arjuna's eyes are also described as lotus eyes, because they're always seeing Krishna. Someone is always seeing Krishna, the lotus Krishna, then they develop lotus eyes, you see. Not these material eyes, you see. But beneath the covering of these material eyes, the spiritual eyes, and the original spiritual body is actually lying dormant within us. That encourages me because I have all this problem with deafness. I think, well, I have a good set of ears and they're just waiting to wake up. Right now I can hardly hear anything, but it's just a temporary blip on the road back to perfection, you know, back to Godhead. But actually we do have that original spiritual form, each one of us. We have our Swarup is waiting for us to come back and get out of this rotten entanglement we're in right now. Just have to come back to our original position. Relishing unlimitedly sweet, loving hello of Krishna. And Krishna's waiting. When you come back? Enough is enough. You see, when do you come back to my transcendental kingdom? Krishna's just waiting for us. So we shouldn't keep Krishna waiting. We should give up our love affair with Maya Devi. You see. Maya Devi, we've been going steady long enough, now it's time to break up. Now my only love is Krishna. Will Maya be angry? No. Oh, very good. I just been waiting when he will do this. I was keeping you in my clutches. That was simply a duty I had. But now I see you're giving me up. Very good. And I will give you all facility. He says, try. When one becomes purely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and then Maya acts as a maidservant to help one advance in Krishna consciousness. So Maya Devi or Durga Devi, she will act either way. She has a dual role to play. She will help us forget Krishna, or she will help us to remember Krishna. That depends on our desire. So again, we come back to this point of desire. We have to desire Krishna. We have to desire to be his pure devotees. We have to have a burning desire in our heart to become pure devotees of Krishna. That burning desire will burn away the lust, the anger, and the greed, and the madness, and the illusion, the envy, which is causing us so much misery, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. So stoke up the fire, bhakti, throw some firewood in there, stoke it up. Where did we get the firewood? Well, it's good kirtan, good prasadam, beautiful deity worship, nice association, gurus, Vaishnavas, you see, Prabhupada books, all of these things, they stoke up the fire of bhakti within the heart. We got to get that fire blazing, each one of us, to get that bhakti fire blazing in our hearts, you see, burning away all the dirt, the inertias. When you get those inertias out, then you come to the stage of nishtha, firm faith. Solid, firm faith, nishtha. Pakka, solid faith. And then from nishtha we come to ruchi. Once you become solid in bhakti, then you get the sweetest nectar, the sweetest taste. Every mantra is oozing with unlimited oceans of glove juice. Can you imagine? When we come to that ruchi stage, every mantra will be like popping another glove jamun in the mouth. Every mantra, Hare Krishna, okay Prabhu, I need to go pop, 1,728 glove jamuns right now. That's how many mantras we chant every day, you see. 108 times 16 is 1,728 repetitions of the Maha Mantra. So when you get to the ruchi stage, it's okay, Prabhu, I got to pop 1,700 glove jamuns right now. I'll be back in a few minutes. See you an hour and a half from now, 2 hours. I'll try to pop 1,728 glove jamuns. Now we're struggling to get our round them. But in the Rushi stage, you could go on chanting. Actually, you could go on chanting japa for millions of years and never get tired. For millions of years, you could chant japa, or you could chant, you know, Brahma Samhita prayers, or anything transcendental, Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. You can go on in any of these activities, you know, for millions of years, nonstop. Can you imagine chanting the Brahma Samhita prayers for millions of years, and just go on for millions and millions of years, driving ever increasing nectar? This is one thing that Shalabhati Mataji told us. I remember she was training us up. After being in LA, she came to join us with Vishnu Janaswami and the travel. We had the traveling, the famous era called the Traveling Rope Show back in '72. And she came with us on the party. She was taking care of the big Radhadamodar deities that are now in Gita Mandiri. Their little brother, the little brother of Damodar, is here in our quarters upstairs, named after them. The big ones, Gita and Agri, she was there to take care of them. She gave a very nice, wonderful classes Shalabhati gave. She told us in one class, and I never forgot, she said that you should be in the mood of devotional service that you could do any one activity and just go on doing it for all of eternity. It's like, okay, now Prabhu, mop the floor. Time to mop the floor. And you can be so much into doing it in a mood of love, you could go on for all of eternity mopping that floor and derive ever-increasing sweetness from it and never get tired of it. You see? That's Krishna consciousness. When you're really connecting with Krishna, then you can do anything. Even scrubbing the toilet, you could do anything for all of eternity and never get tired of it and get ever-increasing sweetness out of that activity. So here we are struggling the Neophyte stage. Well, we just have to keep struggling. Not give up the struggle. Because Krishna will reward us, there's no doubt. If we stick to these regulative principles, rising early, remaining clean, observing Mangal Arati, Tulsi worship, all the Bhagavatam class, honoring Prasadam nicely, cooperating together to please Prabhupada. You see, if we follow all these wonderful guidelines that Prabhupada has given us, then gradually we'll emerge from the sadhana level of struggling to control our senses, and we'll become liberated souls. That stage will come in due course. You have to be patient, we have to be determined, and we have to remain enthusiastic, and then everything will come. The full manifestation of pure love of Godhead will manifest within our hearts. And we'll just live happily with Krishna and Radharani forever in their transcendental pastimes. So are there any questions? Okay, here's some questions.
How to control false ego on a day-to-day basis?
False ego means to think you're the body. That's one thing. It also means to think you're the center of the universe. So how do you control that? Well, you have to, every day, you have to chant good rounds, you have to have good sadhana. That's why we have daily sadhana. Every morning you should have very nice sadhana. You should be hearing and reading Prabhupada's teachings as much as possible. And now if you keep those teachings in mind and you practice the regulative principles, then it will be not that difficult. And if it is sometimes difficult, you should persevere through the difficulty, taking it as a blessing, not becoming discouraged. How to become humble in every situation, offer all respect to others without expecting any respect for yourself. How to develop taste in chanting? Well, you have to remember that there is unlimited nectar in every syllable of the Maha Mantra. It contains unlimited nectar. So have faith that the nectar is there, and just try to connect with the nectar by taking shelter of the name.
What is the technique to associate with devotees so our desires change from material to spiritual? Always serve the devotees. How can I help this devotee? How do we develop a greed for hearing about Krishna, serving, etc., without offending the devotees that help us in our community? Well, why would somebody be offended if you were greedy for hearing about Krishna?
The more you become eager to hear about Krishna, the more you become naturally eager to make all the devotees happy. In other words, the more you become wealthy, the more you'll be enthusiastic to be a philanthropist. The more you become happy in Krishna consciousness, naturally you will share that Krishna consciousness with others.
So there's no question of offending. You'll actually be, the more you have a taste for hearing, the more you become the first class servant of all the devotees.
In this Kali Yuga, how do we nicely preach to women?
Make them realize and understand what Prabhupada explains. Women are like children, they should be protected and not given independence.
Don't take one statement of Prabhupada about women as out of context. Prabhupada also said women are more powerful than men. So
don't take one thing and leave the others. You have to see the total picture. If you want a woman, an educated woman, to be happy executing a woman's duties in Krishna consciousness, then you be a proper man, rascal. You be a proper man. You be the actual male described in the Vedas, and these women automatically be the female described in the Vedas. Don't try to impose something in a chauvinistic way on these poor girls, okay? You be an ideal male Vaishnava, and they'll automatically become ideal female Vaishnavas. It's like the parents say, you know, the parent is smoking cigarettes and tell the kid, don't you smoke cigarettes. You know, you be an ideal woman now. You women, you must be ideal women. And meanwhile, I'm a completely rascal character, you see. That's nonsense. You be an ideal man, and the women will be inspired by your example to be an ideal woman in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada is the ideal grandfather, or father, actually. Yeah, father. He was the ideal father, and all of us were inspired in the ideal men and women in Krishna consciousness, because Prabhupada was so wonderful. He was so full of love and kindness for everyone. Everybody felt Prabhupada's kindness. Prabhupada didn't see, oh, this is a sannyasi. Oh, here's a sannyasi. Oh, there's a woman. And Prabhupada didn't see that. Yet. One sannyasi was in his room one day, and there was also one of the girls was changing the flowers on the desk. Prabhupada ignored the sannyasi. He was very happy to see how nicely this girl was making the flower arrangements. He was appreciating her devotion and was completely ignoring the sannyasi. The present moment, in my conditioned state, I have so many intense desires for other things besides Krishna. So is it because I'm doing something wrong in my devotional practice? No, not necessarily. Of course you could be. But actually it is natural that we have so many desires for things other than Krishna as neophyte devotees, because we've been and under the spell of Maya for thousands and millions of lifetimes. It's natural we are going to feel some attraction for Maya. So how to develop the intense greed and desire for Krishna? You need to associate with and serve and hear from and learn those people who are very greedy and desirous for Krishna, and that will rub off on you. Envy is such a great impediment. And if we feel envy toward devotees, it's, well, how to overcome this anartha.
This is an interesting one. I've told this before, but maybe you all didn't hear it.
When Prabhupada was on this planet, he was only in one place at a time. And, you know, there were so many centers all over the world, and the chances were he wouldn't be at your temple. You know what I mean? He'd be somewhere else in most of the cases, you know, 364 days out of the year, or 363 days out of the year. He'd be somewhere else and not with you. But I was in a remote temple, but he never came in Austin. But we hear devotees say, yeah, I was with Prabhupada on the morning walk, and, you know, he said this, he turned to me and he looked at me, and I was going, oh, wow, you know, this sounds pretty good, but when am I going to get my chance, you know? And it just got to the point where I couldn't stand it anymore. I was hearing all these devotees telling about they were on the walk, they were in the darshan, they were, you know, Prabhupada said this to them, he looked at them. It's just driving me nuts after a while. I was so envious. I couldn't stand it. And I said, I knew this isn't good to be envious of my godbrothers. So I had to write Prabhupada. I said, Prabhupada, I have this problem. I'm envious of my godbrothers who are getting your association. What can I do, Prabhupada, to get out of this envy? And I was thinking he would tell me how to get free from it, but he didn't. It really, I was very pleasantly surprised by Prabhupada's answer. He said, transcendental envy means when you see someone is being recognized more by Krishna than usual, you should try harder so Krishna will recognize you also. So, wow. So, Papa didn't take it as an anartha. He didn't tell me, oh, you have a very bad anartha, you're envious, you've got brothers. He said, here's what you do. He was actually saying, this is good. That you're feeling, well, they're more recognized than me. Why am I not recognized? I'm envious of them. All right, you try harder, so you will also be recognized. And I'm still trying to catch up. I see many godbrothers of mine who are preaching on a much larger scale than I am. You know, one could be envious, but I just think this is Krishna's mercy. I can see these godbrothers, you know, who such bigger scale than me, they're preaching. I'm just a little like the new kid on the block sometimes. I see my godbrothers are preaching in ways that I can't even see of preaching that powerfully and that wide of a scale. But I just think, well, I'm the little brother, you know, just got to catch up with my big brothers. And then instead of being envious, one should be inspired. An example that I oftentimes give about this is, let's say, for example, somebody, you know, plays a really, really good mridanga. I mean, they can really make that thing sing. So you could think, yeah, I'm sure they're really pumped up. So if I'm thinking that way, will I ever play a good mridanga? No. Because I'm envious of that devotee who's playing a good mridanga. But I think, oh wow, you know, he must really feel devotion and see how wonderfully he expresses his devotion through the mridanga. See, if I'm appreciating that devotee instead of being envious, then I will also become a good mridanga player, you see. So in this way, you can appreciate those who are excelling you in whatever way they may be. Appreciate them. And their good qualities will then come to you also.
Why is there a caste system, lower caste and higher caste? According to Islam, all human beings are equal.
Why are they killing the non-Muslims? If they're all equal, then why do they attack the World Trade Center if everybody's equal?
All human beings are equal, and no one is superior to another.
No, actually, they say kill the infidels.
their scripture says they kill the infidels. So they don't see equality. Now the caste system is not a Vedic system. What they call the caste system, where according to your birth, you were considered low or high. No, the actual system is called the Varnashram system, and one is engaged according to their natural propensity in occupational duties. It's not according to your birth. It's like there was one time young boy, he went to the spiritual master, Guruji, I would like to become your disciple. So he said, what is your caste? I actually only take Brahmins as disciples, so what is your caste? He said, well, I don't know, let me go ask my mom. So the mother actually was a prostitute. And she said, well, my dear boy, I'm really sorry, I don't know who your father is. So he went back to the guru, well, my mother doesn't know my caste because she's a prostitute. He said, oh, then you're a Brahmin because you're honest. You see. So there may be some distinctions, but actually the real criterion is one's qualities and one's activities. It's not rigid according to birth. You may say, well, why there should be any distinction? But no. And there's always distinctions. For any organization to go on effectively, there has to be distinctions. Just like here in your temple, everybody here was the temple president. Did the thing run? No. You need to have one temple president, and then you have different department heads, you see. If you say, well, let's make it equal, everyone here is the temple president, and this way the community will go on very nicely. It'll be absolute chaos. Now, only Aniruddha Prabhu is the temple president. Not that everyone is, you're the president, you're the president. You want everybody to feel equal, so not everybody here is the president. It would be absolute chaos. You have one president, Sriman Aniruddha Prabhu, you see. Because every organization requires some division of labor. So things go effectively and smoothly. So in the same way, in the social body, there's a natural division of labor, not arbitrary according to your birth, but according to your qualifications. Who's qualified to be an educator? Who's qualified to be an administrator? Who's qualified to protect cows? Who's qualified to do service very nicely? You see? In this way. Why Krishna has asked Mayadevi to help us from getting Krishna? She's assisting him. Because we wanted to forget him, therefore he's facilitating us, as described in Prabhupada's purport. That forgetfulness is there so we can quickly realize that it's not a very happy position to be forgetful of Krishna, so we can come back to him. Why pure devotees say or desire that Krishna's loving devotional service more than desiring liberation? They don't need liberation. They're already liberated. A pure devotee, Prabhupada explains, has no desire to go to any planet. He doesn't even desire to go to the spiritual world. He simply desires Krishna's association, and that's all. He's associating with Krishna equally, whether he's in the material world or the spiritual world. It doesn't matter. He's beyond liberation. He doesn't need it. Why do we have to do 16 rounds? What is the reason behind that number? Because that's the minimum number that will give you a Krishna, that will charge your consciousness for 24 hours with Krishna consciousness. Just like on your mobile phone, you know, when you charge it up, there's a little indicator that shows you, well, you're 1/4 charged, you're 50% charged, you're 7, now you've got a full charge on your mobile phone, you see. 16 rounds is a full charge. Anything less than that, your spiritual battery is going to run dry before the day's up. You see, you're not going to have enough spiritualization, Krishnaization to make it into Krishna consciousness. You don't do at least 16 minutes. The more, the better. You can supercharge your battery too. This battery will take more than 16. You can supercharge it. for an extra potency, that's good too. But at least 16 rounds. Otherwise, you don't have enough of a battery charge to make it through the day. You get to the afternoon, and some pretty girl will walk by, and you go, hmm. Well, you didn't chant enough rounds for booze. How do I serve the devotees with all of my heart? What a wonderful question. Oh, so nice. How do I serve the devotees with all of my heart? Just think of how kind the devotees have been to you to allow you to be here. Just think how unqualified you actually are to be in this temple and how the devotees have so kindly allowed you to be here. Just try to understand how much love the devotees have given you. And if you remember that and reflect on that always within your heart, then you'll naturally want to give your heart to the devotees. Okay, we gotta kind of, this will be it. No more, any more, I'll save it for tomorrow. I'm a little over time. But regarding rules and regulations, you said our movement is not rules and regulations. Does this mean develop Krishna consciousness that devotees should know any like the rules and regulations? No. Wearing red and blue clothing in front of the deities. I don't, sometimes they ask me, well, my disciples will ask me, well, I got this blue t-shirt, this blue, nice blue t-shirt. I just bought it, you know, a red t-shirt with Krishna on it. Should I, what should I do, Guru Dev? I said, no. He said, it's all right. But don't, when it wears out, don't get a red one the next time, a blue one the next time you buy it. I don't think we should fanatically, you know, ban people from wearing red and blue saris or t-shirts in the temple room. Prabhupada never made such a thing. So we should follow it. But if, you know, if I had, at one time I actually had a blue kerchief, but I realized I had it and I wore it, it was actually, this was against the rules, so I didn't ever buy another blue kerchief after that. I don't think we should, that's up to each individual really. These are very, very minor rules that are not that important, because Prabhupada told, at the same time told Janaki to have Mukunda to buy Janaki a red sari for her wedding. So I don't think we should make a big deal about these things. Are not very important, but one an individual devotee may want to follow those rules for the sake of feeling more connected with Krishna. But I don't think we should tell people, well, you have to give up your red or blue sari or something like that. These are not very important rules, but one can follow them if one wants to. For increasing one's Krishna consciousness. Yeah, there was no deity at that time, that's true. The thing is, Prabhupada only said it once, and I never heard Prabhupada ever make an issue of this ever. Shilavati asked him. I've ever heard ever Prabhupada make an issue of this, but in any conversation, any letter, he never made an issue at one time of this. So therefore, I will never make an issue of it either. I was using the example. Sometimes devotees are appreciable, and when we approach them, I say that you're a good devotee, describe their quality, they feel offended. Why is it that that's a good attitude? Actually, if a devotee doesn't want to be glorified, you should please that devotee by not glorifying them. If you truly appreciate them and they're disturbed by being glorified, then why are you offending them by glorifying them? If you really appreciate them, you would do what pleases them. If they're offended by being glorified, then you certainly wouldn't do it, because you see, if you really appreciate someone, you'll do what pleases them. So if a devotee, that's a devotee's choice. If he doesn't, the spiritual master has a duty, he has to accept glorification. But the devotees in general are not required to accept glorification. If they don't like it, then don't do it. You really appreciate them, that's their free choice. If they don't want to be glorified, that's their right. Because we see that mood in our great acharyas also. One devotee said, I think it was Vrindavan Das Thakur, if you even utter my name, you will go to hell. That's his humility. So if a devotee wants to take that mood following the footsteps of Vrindavan Das Thakur, we must respect that devotee. Actually, the devotee's quality, that one quality of the devotee is silent. Prabhupada said, silent worker. He doesn't expect or desire any glorification. That's one of the qualities of a devotee. So if a devotee wants to show that mood, we should respect it. Not that we try to force glorification on such a devotee. Of course, we like to glorify the devotees because that's beneficial for us. So if you have a devotee that doesn't want to be glorified, you can think, well, how can I get away with glorifying him in such a way that he won't be offended? And there are ways you can do it. You can say, you can glorify his spiritual master, for example, and then he has to accept it. You can say, there are ways to cleverly do it. You can just say, you can say, Prabhu, you are very fortunate to have such and such a spiritual master. Your most fortunate devotee, you have such and such as your guru Maharaj. And he has to say, oh, he has to smile when he hears that. You see, there are ways. You're so fortunate you have so-and-so Maharaj as your spiritual master. You see. So there are ways to appreciate a devotee in such a way that a devotee will like it. You have to be intelligent out of doing them. Okay, so, yes?
Should not the devotees to develop their Krishna consciousness out of respect for the deities and Lord in himself follow the rules and regulations?
What's the question again?
The question is that shouldn't a devotee...
We are meant to follow the rules and regulations, yes, of course.
It's an emergency that we may have to do something, but... Even a little rules and regulations shouldn't, out of respect for the deities, we should follow?
Yes, we are meant to follow the rules and regulations. Especially the top of the list. There's a list given in the next devotion, but the higher up in the list, the more the priority. I mean, there's a rule that you're supposed to, you're supposed to live in Vrindavan, for example. Well, what are we doing? We're here in Melbourne. We're not in Vrindavan. You know what I'm saying?
That Prabhupada said that our temples are Vaikuntha.
Yes, in that way we work up. This is Vrindavan. That's true. Prabhupada told Hare Krishna Prabhu and one of the devotees when they went to Russia for preaching. He said, if you have to preach, if it's required, you can eat meat to stay in Russia and preach. They didn't have to, but Prabhupada was willing to bend the rules that much so that our movement could get a start in Russia.
Didn't that mean that in emergency...
That was on the order of the spiritual master. That was not on their own whim. That was Prabhupada's instruction. So we're meant to strictly follow the rules and regulations, but not as ends in themselves, as servants to help us become more and more situated in Krishna consciousness.
If we neglect the rules and regulations, then how can we be thinking about?
If one is overly attached to rules or neglectful of rules, in either case, one will fall down in Krishna consciousness. So we can't jump to the Raganuga platform and saying, I'm around beyond the rules, Prabhu. Prabhupada said we should be clean shaven, but I'm on the Baba platform, so I have this big beard now. I don't need to follow Prabhupada's instruction about being clean shaven. That's an example. We need to strictly follow the rules and regulations. propagated.
Sometimes, like, for taking prasadam also, sometimes when we visit our friends and relatives, we just eat bhoga sometimes. Or bhoga, or just eat whatever is present.
No, eating bhoga is definitely against the rules. One should not eat bhoga. It's a very, very strong rule. One should not eat bhoga. Only take prasadam. Otherwise you're eating sin.
These are little examples. There are many things.
One should not eat bhoga. Prabhupada was...
Sorry.
Some voice came from somewhere. I saw a hand here. And I heard a voice from somewhere.
He said, sorry. He said, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Yes? Turn your, you can stand sideways and have Guru Puja like this, but in your back is not to the deities. One thing you can do. One thing you can do. Instead of putting your back to the, of course, I mean, it's the little thing is, but it's Prabhupada. And the thing is, it's like I put the garland on Prabhupada in the morning, and I have to put the back to the deities at that time, otherwise they can't put the garland on. So, sometimes Prabhupada would say that is the dilemma. He would chuckle. Because there's a he would say, for example, I've asked all the men to stay brahmachari. I've asked all the women to get married. He said, that is the dilemma. So the thing is, sometimes it seems like how all these things can go on, it seems contradictory, but actually Krishna is very kind, and if we simply surrender to Him, everything works out perfectly. But everything works out perfectly if we simply surrender to Krishna. That dissolves all conflicts. But when in doubt, that's why you have a spiritual master, that's why you have a temple president, that's why you have department heads. When in doubt, ask your superior Vaishnavas. Once Mataji wrote Prabhupada this big, long list of questions about how to worship Tulsi Devi. And Prabhupada, he answered each one very carefully. But one question Prabhupada said, if you don't have common sense, ask somebody who does. That was his answer. So sometimes, we just don't have common sense. And therefore you have to ask somebody who has common sense about different things, you know. Actually, I remember in the old Honolulu temple, they had these big, huge tulsis growing. And you're not supposed to step on Tulsi's shadow. And how do you get up and down the sidewalk into the temple? And Prabhupada said, don't live, don't die. Anyway, Prabhupada is very merciful. You just have to sincerely try to follow all the rules and regulations to the best of your ability. And you know, Krishna says, I preserve what they have and I carry what they have. Prabhupada one time said, if I told you all the rules and regulations, you would faint. Actually, the rule is, the Kadasi, you don't eat anything. You don't drink anything, you don't sleep. That's the real problem of Ekadasi. How did Prabhupada introduce Ekadasi to the To us young boys and girls back in early days of this kind, it was a feast day. A feast day.
With no grains and beans.
It was a feast day. That's how we introduced avakadasi. Time for the feast day. That's how I introduced akadasi to us. And he never insisted we had to do nirjal or we had to stay up all night. But that's the actual, he told us in Dallas, that's the actual standard for akadasi. No, don't, you can't eat anything, you can't drink any water, you can't sleep, you gotta stay up all night. That's a real problem in akadasi, but Prabhupada never demanded them, nor did he even do that himself. He could have, but he didn't. There's Tamal Krishna has told us one case. This is really an amazing story. The devotees accidentally broke a codicil, and Prabhupada went ahead and broke it also so he could be one with the devotees and they could all observe it the next day. Prabhupada went ahead and broke it with everyone else. Can you imagine? Tamal Krishna has told me that. So, you know. Because he wanted everyone to be together. So that to work cooperatively as a spiritual family is a very important principle. Prabhupada was willing to break codicil just so he could be one with all the devotees and they could all observe the next day together. Can you imagine? So the most important thing is we all stay together as a loving family. And that's one of the most important rules we have.
Should we imitate
Srila Prabhupada? No, we shouldn't imitate Srila Prabhupada. We have to follow his instructions. Following the footsteps is not being imitated. Well, I think I'll go sit on the Vyasa, move Prabhupada, Murray over, I'll sit there on the Prabhupada's Vyasa sun, imitate it, we'll sit there together in the Vyasa sun. No. Don't imitate Srila Prabhupada. Follow his instructions. That is following the footsteps. We're going way over time. We're breaking the rule. So I apologize for breaking the temple rule. I hope the leaders will forgive me. I won't try to do it every day. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
This great Srimad Sankarsan Das Adhikari Maharaj ki
jai. Who would like the garland?